Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Have you ever found yourself in some situation and thought, how did I get here? The here could be anywhere, a fantastic job or a paradise location, or in the arms of some sizzling hot, pointy woman. Or it could be a jail cell or a cubicle of a job you hate. Might be the zenith of achievement or one of those rock-bottom moments. There's this quirky song by the Talking Heads from the 80s. The title is Once in a Lifetime. And the lyric is, one of it goes, and you may find yourself living in a shotgun shack, or in another part of the world, or behind the wheel of a large automobile, or find yourself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife, and you ask yourself, how did I get here? I always thought David Byrne extracted the wrong phrase for the song title. The song should have been called, How Did I Get Here? A lot of people thought that song was about greed or consumerism, but Byrne said the song was about the unconscious, quote, we operate half awake or on autopilot and end up, whatever, with a house and family and job and everything else, and we haven't really stopped to ask ourselves, how did I get here, unquote. I know how David Byrne got where he was going, on two wheels, when I lived in Manhattan. I would often see him bicycling around the town. Very different from Joe Walsh and his Maserati. Your East Coast versus West Coast rock stars, huh? Many of us non-rock stars still ask the question, how did I get here? Some people have these detailed roadmaps for their lives, with not just the departure and destination figure out, they've got a pushpin in every waypoint along the journey. We've all known those types. Maybe they dig chemistry and bio in high school and then decide to do pre-med in college and then on to med school and they pick a specialty. It seems like their lives, or at least their careers, are on rails. There may be some twists and turns, but the course is set. There will be no detours. A detour would be tantamount to a derailment. It might not be medicine, could be law or architecture, business, just about anything. And there's a lot to be said for those who have such a clear direction early in their lives. It eliminates uncertainty and indecision, but there might be a downside. It could also eliminate a lot of adventure. Might be the difference between a guided tour at some theme park or taking a desert road that isn't even listed on a map. Some of us are more driven by what we don't want to do than what we want to do. In my senior year of college, I flirted with the notion of a law career. Took the LSATs, applied to a few schools, was accepted by a couple. But I hated everything about it. It all made me ill. Torts and plaintiffs and briefs and codicils. I do like to argue, but that's probably 0.01% of lawyering. And when I do argue, I want to have the option of telling my opponent to fuck themselves with a broken bat. That would not go over well in a courtroom. I'm also not real fond of authority. Calling someone Your Honor just doesn't seem right, at least not in America. You can call the leader of the free world Mr. President or Mr. So-and-so, and that's okay. But this Your Honor stuff, that's a little too close to Your Highness. It's bullshit, and it should stop. Get rid of the robes, too. Medieval foppery, fuckery, and pretension. Some of the worst life outcomes are for those who follow a path that's guided by neither passions nor aversions, but by doing what others think they should do. That never ends well. So many people embark on careers, not because they dig the work, but because they're after the money or prestige, or they want to please a parent or their husband or wife or fiancé. When my wife was pregnant with our first daughter, a pal of mine recommended an obstetrician. He said the guy was the best in L.A., maybe the country, and he had saved his wife's life. Whenever I hear an endorsement that ardent, I get a little skeptical. Turned out, He understated his appraisal. This doctor was all that and more. Reason was, he wasn't just good at what he did. He loved what he did. You could tell that birthing babies was his reason for living. I had 100% confidence in him. And when my wife went into labor, he was on a cruise in the South Pacific. So some UFO filled in. We had never met him before. When he came into the delivery room, I thought he was an orderly. He looked kind of like Eddie Van Halen. He had the rock and roll hair, the who gives a fuck attitude. He was chewing a wad of bubblegum, even had a pack of Luckies rolled up in the sleeve of his scrubs. He strolled in and asked my wife if this was her first baby. She answered yes, and then he said, this is a direct quote, "Relax, this'll be no different than taking a big shit." My wife was holding my hand and gripped it so hard I thought the bones would crack. This was a moment when I asked myself, how did I get here? And how do I get my wife out of here? What the hell was I going to do? Put her on a gurney and wheel her over to another hospital and see if there was an obstetrician with some white space on his calendar? Then God or fate intervened. The labor nurse looked at me, rolled her eyes. She didn't say a word, but her face said, "Don't worry about this asshole. I've got your wife covered." Dr. Eddie Van Halen hung around for another minute or two and then disappeared, probably to smoke a Lucky. That's when the nurse verbally reassured us that she had done this hundreds of times and he wasn't quite as insane as he appeared and everything would be okay. Well, she was fantastic and really helped my wife through the ordeal. As our daughter was about to be born, Dr. Eddie returned and asked me if it would be a boy or a girl, and I told him I didn't know. He looked at me like I was crazy. Then he asked if it was a boy, did I want him circumcised? Absolutely not, was my reply. And then he gave me this big argument. I'd done a lot of reading about the subject, and I had an answer for every reason he gave. It got very heated. I wasn't backing down an inch. This was my kid, and nobody was putting a scalpel to my kid's dick. And moments later, my beautiful daughter was born. One of the two peak moments of my life, the other being the birth of my second daughter. I was shocked at her appearance. In movies, right, the newborns are always crying and bald with pie-slit eyes. My kid's eyes were open wide. She was silent, except for a little squeak she let out as she lay on my wife's chest. She also had a full head of spiky dark hair like a punk rocker. She looked at me and all around the room as if, oh, so this is what the world looks like. Dr. Van Halen handed me a big pair of scissors, asked me if I wanted to cut the cord. I was astonished by the girth of it. I'd always imagined an umbilical cord might have the diameter of a drinking straw. This thing was like a pumpkin stem. It took several squeezes of the scissors to get through it. I cut it, then he tied it lower in her belly. The nurse took her and washed her and weighed her and put her back on my wife's chest. The experience had been very different than I had expected. There was no chaos, very little noise. It was low-key and zen. And I was glad of that. A person's first moments on earth should be calm and peaceful. About 10 years later, I ran into Dr. Eddie at a delicatessen. It was a rainy night in L.A., and my wife had the flu, and I was in there buying a quart of their fantastic chicken soup. Dr. Eddie and I said hello. He remembered me and the circumcision conflict. Then he went on to tell me how his life had cratered over the past few years. It was so weird. I'd only spent maybe 20 minutes with him in that delivery room, but he was telling me stuff like we were old friends. For some reason, he no longer practiced medicine. Who does that, huh? Had his license been pulled? I don't know. He said he could have had some kind of insurance policy that would have paid him a mid-six-figure income for the rest of his life, but for some reason, he opted out. He was in dire straits financially and was too old to begin another career. And what the hell would he do anyway? It was one of the most bizarre conversations of my life. And as he talked, I thought of that Talking Heads song and how he must surely be thinking, how did I get here? When we're kids, we never ever think adults have that thought or ask themselves that question, especially doctors and lawyers and business execs, huh? We assume their lives are together, that their careers are on rails, that nothing can go sideways, that derailment is not possible. We think the course they plot for their lives is precise, that they move from waypoint to waypoint with the confidence that good planning assures. But, as Robert Burns wrote, the best-laid plans of mice and men oft go astray. After a while, the deli man called my number and put the container of soup by the register. I really felt bad for Dr. Eddie. I wished him well and that his troubles would vanish. One of the last things he said was, quote, "I don't know why the hell I ever went into medicine." I stepped out into the rain and got in my car. 10 years earlier, from my brief interaction with him, it was clear he wasn't all that into medicine. What had his passion really been? He certainly presented a rocker look. Did he have a room full of guitars at home? Maybe he'd been a vocalist with a band in his youth. Maybe he wanted to be a stand-up comic. Decades ago, had he found terms like subdural hematoma as repulsive as I had in loco parentis? I was so glad I did not go into law. Not long ago, my wife heard that Dr. Eddie had died. No cause of death was given. I thought back on that rainy night at the deli. It was doubtful he had resolved his situation. Ultimately, it was resolved for him. At what point in his career did he know he was not cut out for medicine? Pre-med, medical school, residency? What was the point of no return? As often happens when I'm putting together an episode, there's an event that dovetails with the theme of the show. An email came in a few days back from a listener who may be in a how did I get here situation. He asked me to share it with you, and his name is not Rick, but that's what I'm using. Here's what he had to say. "Hey Larry, I started listening a few months back and have done a deep dive through your entire library, including the bonus episodes. I'm a Patreon." Ooh, thank you, Rick. "Now I find myself in a situation and in need of your advice. I've always been a techie, was building my own computer since fifth grade. I have a degree in electrical engineering. Part of my passion for the field was being able to make my vision a reality, or at least learn by doing. I got a job about a year ago and I hate it. I'm stuck in a cubicle, a cog in a vast machine. I feel stifled and channeled and dread every day at work. I feel like I'm on a hamster wheel. And although the money is okay, I cannot imagine doing this or anything like this for the rest of my life. My parents paid for my tuition. I feel like I wasted their money and years of my life pursuing a career that is not for me. I'm looking for another job, but in my field it seems like they'll be the same as this one. Any ideas on how to reset? Thanks and take no shit. Rick, thanks for listening and supporting the show, and I feel your pain. You didn't give your age, but it seems you're in your mid early 20s, and that's a good place to be, unlike Dr. Eddie Van Halen. First, relax and take a bow. You have done something many people can never do. You have not only faced the truth, you have acknowledged it, which is why it will all work out for you to your complete satisfaction. Next, give yourself a little slap in the face, and that's for punishing yourself over having wasted your parents' money on tuition for an education you may no longer need. I doubt they're pissed off at all. Unfortunately, colleges offer nothing to students to help them find their passion. They assume you already know it at age 18? That's a stupid assumption. I am not a techie, but if I understand your dilemma, you feel as I would were I building microphones instead of talking into one. And in your case, you're looking for that, what, Wozniak Jobs experience, the thrill of the build and entrepreneurship. And most corporations do everything they can to discourage and suppress guys like you. When I interviewed the tech titan John McAfee, which you can hear in episodes 236 and 237 at thatlarryshow.com, John told me something that directly relates to your situation. He was a guy who wore many hats in his storied career, and I asked him which endeavor made him happiest. He said it was when he was just starting his antivirus enterprise, when it was only John and a few pals sitting around eating pizza and figuring out ways to stop computer viruses. That sounded boring as hell to me, but it was clearly John's passion. Once the company became hugely successful, and there were employees to do that work, John, as the founder and CEO, well, he was relegated to administrative memos and policy and all that shit. He said he became miserable working at his own company. If you really drill down to what drives people with their passions, it's always the thrill of creation and achievement, whether it's you building a computer or McAfee foiling viruses. Instead of moving to another outfit, probably with the same misery index, maybe you should search for a partner or partners who share your frustration and your vision. The solo successful entrepreneur is a rare, rare bird. If you can gather and plan with some like-minded people, you may just create the situation of your dreams. Again, not being a techie, I know nothing of that field. And it's possible that garage entrepreneurs are a thing of the past, and the tech cartels have a stranglehold on everything. If so, maybe there's another vocation that lights your jets, and some soul-searching will reveal what that is, and you could take a swing at it for a while. When you get yourself to that quiet place and filter out the chaos and distractions, the answer will come. Good luck to you, Rick. One way or another, you will do well. I know it. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. Stop by the show page at thatlarryshow.com for more content and commentary, as well as hundreds of other episodes. While you're there, click a subscribe button so you never miss one. If you really like what you just heard, click the Patreon button for access to dozens of bonus episodes where we tend to get a little more personal and contentious. Write to me at thatlarryshow@gmail.com and follow the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Mastodon. You can find all those links on the homepage at thatlarryshow.com. There's some cool new show merchandise, vintage motel-style key fobs. Only 10 bucks. Built to last, they look right, feel right, and won't get lost in your bag, and they tell the world you're a member of the Take No Shit Dojo. You can find those on the homepage. My friends, if you ever ask yourselves, how did I get here? And only mouth breathers don't. It's a good idea to follow up with an even more important question. Where am I going? Wherever that is, Godspeed, and may you go on your terms. I'll see you next Wednesday or thereabouts, and until that time, take no shit.